G Suite by Google Cloud is a suite of cloud-based productivity tools that includes Gmail, Docs, Slides, Sheets, and Drive. You can make real-time updates to the same document without having to keep track of multiple versions. And since all the tools are cloud-based, your whole team can access the same document and work on the same page at the same time.
Make it with G Suite by Google Cloud. To find out more, visit gsuite.com.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? DJ Bucky here, Move the Sticks. And, Buck, we have got a jam-packed episode today where we've got a really, really fun conversation, one of the best players in college football, to go along with some NFL chat.
Yeah, this is an exciting day for me because Will Greer is a guy that I follow for a long time since his days in Charlotte, having gone up to the Elite 11 process and watching him. Fantastic conversation with him. But then we get a chance to talk about the Monday night football game. We saw the New England Patriots splatter the Buffalo Bills. We'll talk about top 10 teams in the draft and their draft needs. And we also will touch on the college game, and maybe we'll even preview the college football playoff.
Oh, there you go. Let's jump in first of all here with what took place in Monday Night Football. I'll be honest with you. I kind of made a joke on the pod about how this game at halftime, it was over, and if you're a Buffalo Bills fan, you might not even be around to watch the halftime ceremony there to honor Thurman Thomas. But look, the Buffalo Bills kept this competitive. I thought their defense did a nice job of containing that New England offense. Ended up being a 25-6 ball game, but that being said, it was competitive. It was closer than I thought, although it wasn't very pretty.
No, it wasn't very pretty. They found a way to get it done. Offensively, they sputtered in the red zone. But defensively, they made a couple plays. Devin McCourty with a pick six at the end was kind of the nail in the coffin. We saw them kind of throw the ball all over the yard, kind of get it to their playmakers. I think the big thing that came out of the game, Kadarius Patterson playing a little tailback, 10 carries, had 38 yards, and then using James White out the backfield. He continues to be the weapon that they lean on when they need it. And Julian Edelman also played a big factor in the passing game for them.
No doubt, and we do have the trade deadline coming up today. I think we are going to see a flurry of activity. So when you're listening to this, you might have a bunch of news. You're wondering, why did they talk about this? Because it hadn't gone down yet. But I do think we are going to see some moves. I think Demaryius Thomas is going to get traded. I think Golden Tate ends up getting traded. We're going to see some movement there. A couple of the names that have been flying around. I've heard Derrick Henry, his name has been flying around out there. Landon Collins was told his name has been out there. So I think we'll see a lot of activity. I'm looking forward to seeing how this all shakes out. But look, trades are fun. I think they're good. I'm hoping we get some action here before the deadline.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see how it all works out. But obviously, people are on the move. We've seen more teams make trades early in the year. We definitely will see a handful of trades occur at the deadline.
No doubt. All right, let's jump in here. I want to talk about the draft, 2019 draft. We know at this point in time, if the season ended, what the top 10 would look like. I thought we'd just kind of roll through these teams real quick here and just say what that priority should be for them. In the draft. Now, we don't know. We got to do a lot of work on these kids, see who comes out, and figure out what the makeup of this draft is. But as it ends, if the season ended right now, the number one pick in the 2019 draft belongs to, drum roll, the New York Giants.
The New York Giants. And, man.
What do you think? I mean, it's quarterback, right?
Man, it has to be quarterback. The New York Giants. Can you imagine the Giants picking second and first in back-to-back years? No one would have thought this based on how they thought this offense would look, but it hasn't worked out. David Gettleman and those guys banked on Eli Manning being able to be a productive player. They thought he still could kind of dust off the old two-time MVP Eli Manning, but it hasn't happened. So now it's obvious. It's painfully obvious that they need a quarterback. They got to find a guy that can be the quarterback for the next decade. And so looking at this draft, we'll see if they can find an A-level talent that can get them over the hump. I hate to be desperate looking for a quarterback when I'm sitting at the top of the board. It makes you misevaluate players. You have big misses when you do that. But this is where the Giants are sitting. Unless they're able to address their quarterback need in free agency or via trade, they're going into the draft knowing that they have to find a quarterback at the top of the board.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going into the grocery store, they only can shop in one aisle, right? I mean, that's kind of the situation.
That is not ideal. That is not ideal. Ideal shopping.
Now, team picking behind them, the number two pick belongs to the San Francisco 49ers. They have their quarterback, unfortunately. Didn't get to see Jimmy Garoppolo this year due to that injury. But where do you think they go?
You know, I think they have to go offensive playmaker. It's all about Jimmy G. Jimmy Garoppolo is the quarterback. They got him last year, so now it's continuing to build everything up around him. We could talk about maybe addressing the offensive line, but they need a running back, a tight end, a wide receiver, someone who can put points on the board. That has to be the priority if I'm Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch.
All right, the number three pick, a team with Man, I would say more than a few holes is a nice way to say it there, with the Oakland Raiders sitting there at number three. You know, their hope is that you've got the Giants with the first pick, hoping they take a quarterback. And then you've got the 49ers and you've got Oakland. So Oakland is probably sitting there hoping the 49ers look offensive linemen, or they, you know, maybe there's a team that would trade up for a quarterback. Maybe you get a team like Jacksonville would vault up there for a quarterback. But I know Oakland's sitting there at number three. I don't know if they would go quarterback. I kind of doubt it, Buck. But I do know there's an elite pass rusher that has already declared for the draft that Oakland would be licking their chops to get a shot at there. Up there in the Bay Area.
Well, I mean, they have to replace a pass rusher. You know, they had a pretty good pass rusher.
He was pretty good. He was pretty good.
They took him number four overall a few years ago. But that's neither here nor there. So now they got to go and get a pass rush. They have to be able to find someone that can get to the quarterback. There are a ton of pass rushes and defensive tackles in this draft that will be available. So at number three, if I'm the Oakland Raiders, I have to address the defense. I have to find a way to close the gap, give my quarterback, Derek Carr, a chance to win games.
All right, we get to roll through some of these teams here and just pick out maybe one or two that interest you. Buffalo at four, Arizona at five, Cleveland at six, Indy at seven, the Jets at eight, Jacksonville nine, Denver 10. Just grab a team in that mix, Buck, and give me an idea what you think they should do.
Well, I'm going to go right to the next team. I'm going to go to the Buffalo Bills. The Buffalo Bills have committed to Josh Allen, but when you look at their roster, they don't have much on offense. You have an older Shady McCoy.
Offensive line, buddy.
Offensive line is not good. You don't have any weapons on the outside. So, really, they can sit and just take the best available offensive player, and it will fit a need. But at some point, they do have to become more explosive on the outside. If they want Josh Allen to be everything that they think he can be, they got to surround with weapons on the outside.
And I'll go to another team with a rookie quarterback, the New York Jets. They're at number eight. Offensive line, and maybe offensive line. need to upgrade there, and then giving him some more help as well. I do like Herndon, though, young tight end from Miami, a guy we both like coming out.
Yep.
He's starting to make some plays for this football team. So they have some pieces there. We'll see what Robbie Anderson does going forward. But receiver to me would be secondary. Right now, to me, it's about getting better up front.
Yeah, it's funny. So in the next five, when I'm looking at Cleveland, Indy, Jets, Jacksonville, and Denver, and thinking about the Indianapolis Colts, because the Colts have kind of made up some ground. They have been able to run the football. Marlon Mack, who I think we both liked a lot in the draft process, has put up back-to-back games. I was coming into the process thinking maybe they need to get a running back, an offensive playmaker. They still need an offensive weapon, someone on the outside to go opposite T.Y. Hilton. But I don't know if the urgency is there to get him in the first round. I think Chris Ballard can really take the best player, being an offensive playmaker or a defensive playmaker, to go with Darius Leonard. I think they're trending in the right direction. I think it's just about continuing to add good players to this roster. The board is wide open for the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah, well, this is going to be a fascinating top 10 here if it ended like this. Man, Jacksonville, with the expectations what they were, for them to be picking in the top 10, whew. That's rough.
That's
rough
definitely one. Not ideal. It's not an ideal situation for them right now, for sure.
No joke. That first-place schedule is no joke. You're figuring that one out. All right, Buck. I want to get to our switch over here to college football. And before we talk about the big weekend we just had, I guess we'll save the preview for our next episode. But before we get there, I do want to roll our conversation with one of our favorite people in college football. All right, Buck, excited to be joined by our next guest, a good buddy of ours. We got to know a little bit at the Elite 11, West Virginia quarterback Will Greer joining us. Will, how you doing, man?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on, guys.
First of all, just to get things kicked off here, you guys find yourself sitting number 12 in the country right now, a huge game coming up against a Texas. But how would you assess the season, both individually and collectively, as a team so far this season?
Yeah, well, I think there's always room for improvement, and we strive to get better every week. I think we've done a good job of improving and fixing our mistakes as we've moved through the season. You know, I think that there's still a lot of room to grow. I think we have a lot of potential that hasn't really been on display quite yet this year. I think that we're leaving a lot on the field, and I'd like to see us kind of put together a full game and really maximize what we can do and what we worked so hard in the offseason for. So still a lot to look forward to with this team is kind of the message.
You know, to that point, Will, what were some of the things that you wanted to accomplish your final season at West Virginia, and how's the progress going?
Yeah, I think, you know, even before the season, it's we have a 1-0 mentality every week, you know, and the goal with that is to eventually win every game. You know, I had a tough one a couple weeks ago that you can't take back, so you still have to have that 1-0 mentality moving forward. And you know, I think, like I said, I think this team is really good, and I think that we are leaving a lot out on the field. I think that we have opportunities now going forward to maximize what we can really do, and I'd like to see us do that the next couple of weeks.
Take us behind the curtain a little bit with your relationship with your head coach there. You got one of the most creative offensive minds really in any level of football there you're working with. What's that interaction like during the week as you guys are installing a game plan, getting ready for an opponent? What's your relationship like there during a practice week?
Yeah, well, it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy working with Dana and with Spav. They're both, like you said, great offensive minds and, you know, really, really innovative coaches that, you know, it's a lot of fun to play for them. They got great personalities and a huge passion for the game. They love to talk ball and continue to grow. And I appreciate that as kind of a gym rat myself. I love just learning football and talking ball with those guys and trying to absorb as much as I can from them. And, you know, that's a lot of our practice week is mentally just going through stuff and game planning. I like to be really involved in game planning with Spav and the rest of the offensive staff. And they're very open to letting me sit in all the meetings and watch film with them. And that's really helped my development. And I appreciate what they've been able to do for me from that aspect. And I think it translates really well to the game. You know, I feel really comfortable going into a Saturday like I've already kind of played the game in my head.
You know, that, I mean, it speaks volumes to them for allowing you to be really, really involved in the game planning. And also it kind of debunks some of the, I guess, the reputation that some quarterbacks coming out of an air raid system have. Can you talk about why you're a little more than just a system quarterback that some would perceive?
Yeah, I don't really understand. I think that, you know, with Pat Mahomes and Baker Mayfield doing what they've been able to do, it kind of speaks volumes to – you know, what we're doing here. I've played for two different offensive coordinators at Florida and then obviously came here. So I've played in a couple different systems and really appreciated everything that I've learned from each guy. I think I've learned a lot and played in a lot of different systems, but the system I'm in now is, you know, like I said, and it's a testament to Dana and Spav and what they've kind of how much they've allowed me to learn and be a part of it. But I've developed a ton the past couple of years, learned more football than I have anywhere else. It's just general football. When you talk what we do in the off season, we're never just limited to our offense necessarily. We watch a lot of NFL tape. We watch a lot of other college teams that did really well on offense last year, and just talk ball and learn football. And that's run game. I do more in the run game now than I did at Florida, just getting our guys in the best position in the run game that we can to be successful. And then you got pass protections and route concepts and everything. I mean, I'm doing a lot at the line of scrimmage and really feel comfortable doing it. So I think it makes for an easy transition to the NFL. I just think that when you talk air raid, it's a little different when you can go on the ball, not have to huddle. The pre-snap process is still the same. We're just calling it with signals. To kind of keep the guys out there and lined up and have the ability to go fast. But most of the time, we're not even trying to push tempo. We want to control the tempo, be able to go fast and go slow whenever we want. I hope that kind of answers your question.
No question. And you look at, you mentioned it with Mahomes and with Baker, the success they're having at the NFL level. And you look around college football and see what you guys are doing, what Oklahoma's doing, what Washington State's doing. That stigma, I think, has long since left. One of the things we're always looking for in the scouting process, though, Will, is leadership at the quarterback position is huge. And so I want to just go back inside the building, take us behind the scenes a little bit. You guys stub your toe against Iowa State. You've got a perfect season rolling along. You hit a little adversity there. What goes on during that week? What was your message to the rest of the offense following that game and the next week leading up to get ready for that whooping you guys put on Baylor?
Yeah, I think it's the next play mentality was the first thing that I thought that I needed to instill into our team was, you know, that, you know, there's some things we need to fix, but it's time to move on, you know, right after the game. And the things we need to fix, you know, the things that I was really pushing into our team was our energy and our passion to really appreciate the opportunity that we have to play this wonderful game. You know, I think we got into a we got into a little deal where we had bad practice habits. I think we kind of got lulled to sleep a little bit. you know, I don't think we were practicing and appreciating the game and respecting the game every day we went out to practice. And I put that on leaders. I put that on myself and the rest of our older senior leaders to push everybody in practice, because that stuff translates to the game. And I think that's what happened, you know, at Iowa State. They were really fired up and played really hard. I feel like they played harder and played with more passion than we did. And it's hard to win in a game like that where guys are playing harder than you. I don't care who it is. That's part of college football is, you know, the team that's more excited to play, that has more passion, that plays harder on every play has a better chance to win. And that's really highlighted at the college level, in my opinion. So that was the biggest message for me the next week was, this is a game that you don't get. You only get so many opportunities. I have a lot of respect for this game. And I've tried to instill that in my teammates, to respect every opportunity you get to go out and practice, lift weights, use these facilities. And obviously on game day, it'll translate. But the opportunity to go play a college football game on Saturday, you should appreciate and respect and play with passion on every single play.
We always love to hear those leadership takes. One other thing that we like to kind of hear from a vantage point, a scouting vantage point, we call it the three H's. And the thing that I want to ask you is, right now, today, what has been your biggest highlight throughout your career?
Biggest highlight?
Mm-hmm.
Like a
just
play?
Just anything. What would
could
you
be
say?
Anything. Could be an experience, just a game, oh, a wow. win, a season, you name it.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of highs and a lot of lows, which is part of the game. I think myself personally, you know, the injury last year was really tough on me. You know, I'm obviously a competitive, really competitive guy, and was just playing ball. I've made that play a lot of times, and it was kind of a freak accident. And, you know, my team really took that hard, and I really took that hard, not being able to be out there for obviously the rest of that game and the rest of the season. You know, I haven't missed a lot of games in my career, so that was really hard on me to miss those games. But I felt like, you know, after we decided to come back, and I say we, I mean some of the guys that were thinking about leaving, and you know, we kind of had a talk and wanted to, you know, do this thing one more year. Felt like we had a good team and good leadership, a good nucleus to build off of. And this offseason, as far as development on and off the field and the relationships I built with the coaches and guys, it was really the highlight of my career. I think from a family standpoint, just everything. I really maximized everything in this offseason. And, you know, really became a professional. I really grew with the guys around me. I think a lot of us have become, have developed a lot, like I said, on and off the field. And I was really proud of the way we kind of attacked this offseason more than anything and grew as men and as football players. And it was the most fun that I've had with a group of guys as well playing football. So that's kind of been the highlight of my career, was really this past offseason working with these guys.
You hammered both. You hammered what the hardship was, what the highlight has been, and the last one we always hit you with everybody that rolls through here, it's just your hero. It could be anybody in your personal life, in your football life, but who's Will Greer's hero?
My wife is my hero.
That's the right answer. That is
good
the
answer.
Right answer.
Good answer.
Some brownie points, right? Yeah. No, she is, man. I tell you, I've been around a lot of great people, and I, like I said, I appreciate every relationship that I've built through this awesome game. I've had the opportunity to meet and learn from a lot of awesome, awesome people. But when you just talk about life, there's no one that's my hero more than my wife.
And you've got a family, young family as well. I feel like we have a little bit of kindred spirits here. But I got married going into my senior year at Appalachian State, and I remember that cell phones weren't really a thing, Will. So I was in the weight room in the off season, and our assistant strength coach comes out and goes, "Hey, your wife's on the phone." And I was like, "What?" So I go inside the little strength coach office, and I go, "Honey, hey, what's going on? Everything okay? I'm just trying to get a workout." And she goes, yeah, I'm pregnant." And I said, "Okay, all right, here we go." So what was that experience like? There's very few of us that are married, and then I was just that we were expecting a child. You have a child. What's that experience like as a family man still in the college football world?
Yeah, it's interesting. Obviously, I've done both, and that's you know, part of the reason my wife's my hero is the support and what she's done on the you know, behind closed doors with this whole thing. You know, we got pregnant a couple years ago when we were transitioning. I was transferring, which you know, that was hard on me as well and hard on us. And you know, got pregnant, and I, you know, obviously young and didn't know there's just a lot of unknown, and she was always kind of my rock through all this. You know, she was, you know, just have a lot of respect for the way she handled it and handled everything, you know, and kind of we did this thing together. I took it as a sign from God to, you know, commit to her, and she committed to me. And, you know, we kind of just decided to do this thing together. She moved to Morgantown with me, where she knows nobody. It's a long way from home, no family here, and did a pregnancy, had a baby, and raised a baby for 2 years here with really little to no help, which is, that's, I'm telling you, it was not easy on her, and not easy on me, just seeing her kind of battle and go through that. And that's part of the reason she's my hero. But it was a lot on us, and like I said, this off season, we both have you know, kind of gone through a lot of you know, building and growing, and that's part of the reason I said that was my highlight. I just feel like we have found peace and happiness, and really felt like we've done a lot together and grown so much that it was you know, it's really, you know, kind of shaped who we are, and we're really proud of who we see in the mirror now and what we've kind of done together and what we've been through. And we have a healthy and happy almost 2-year-old, and she's wonderful and runs the house and makes messes that we clean up, and it's all good, man.
No, that's terrific. That is a great story. I can't let you go, because one of the things that scouts always want to know from a player, who do you pattern your game after? Who do you look at on Sundays or Monday nights in the National Football League and say, man, I would love to pattern my game after him?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, you know, because we, like I said, I mentioned, me and Spav watch a lot of NFL tape in the offseason. We have past couple years, and we've watched a little bit of everybody. You know, he's, you know, Spav's a big Tom Brady and Patriots guy, and we modeled our offense a lot on what they do. It's really some good stuff. So watched a lot of Tom Brady film. Like, I love the way he plays. I love the way Aaron Rodgers plays. I have a lot of respect for him and the way he attacks the game. But Drew Brees is probably the guy that sticks out to me just from a work ethic standpoint. You know, I actually, my younger brother went to a Saints game. He was a Saints fan when he was younger, and he went to a Saints game in New Orleans with my dad. It was just them two when he was, I don't know, eight or nine years old. He was younger, and they came back and told me. And you know, I was playing quarterback at the time. I was younger, and they came back and said before the game, they watched Drew Brees go all the way up and down the field, doing 3-step drops and throwing timing routes to his receivers all the way up and down the field, and it was full speed and crisp and perfect and just intense. And they came back and told me that story, and ever since then, I've just kind of loved and appreciated the way that he respects the game. And I've tried to kind of emulate that and try and, you know, be the leader that he is. And I think that's a great way to attack the game. And like I said, I think you use that with, and I take influence from a couple of different guys, as I've mentioned, and those aren't the only three, but that's the guy that kind of sticks out to me.
Well, you've been very generous with your time, man. I've got one final thing to accomplish here. This is going to be a classic kill two birds with one stone, because the last time I talked to you at the Elite 11, like, I've been hitting the head a lot, and so I confused it. Having been to both schools, I said, how do you enjoy living in Huntington, and you're such a nice guy, you're a sweetheart of a guy, you didn't correct me about being in Morgantown. And as you can imagine, the West Virginia fans came out in full force and were crushing me on Twitter. So I know you come from your family, and you have a very creative family, have made their way in the media world and become social media superstars. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to tap into your creative side, and I'm going to get myself out of trouble, because I'm going to let you just give me a slogan, like a commercial, a quick little slogan for Morgantown. Like, I grew up in San Diego, and they always say, San Diego, America's finest city. So I'm going to let you just give me a quick little sales pitch, a little slogan on Morgantown, West Virginia, and you can get me out of trouble here, Will.
Man, I would say passion and pride is in our blood. You know, this, and I say that because having the opportunity to play here and for this state, these fans and these people are hardworking people that have a lot of passion for what we do as a program, but for life in general, and a lot of pride in the state and in our program, which, you know, it's an honor to represent.
There you go. Morgantown, passion and pride. It's in our blood. That's the commercial right there. Nicely done, Will. Hey, man, huge game for you and your team this week. We'll be watching. You're a fun player to study. We've had a great time visiting with you, and I know we'll catch up with you down the road as you get into that draft process, man. Have a great week this week.
Thank you, man. Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys. Pleasure.
Well, there you have it, Buck. A fun conversation there with Will Greer. I appreciate him getting me out of trouble there with a little Morgantown love after screwing that up with Huntington, the home of Marshall. That did not endear me to the folks in West Virginia.
No, you weren't really a fan favorite in West Virginia, but he saved you. Will Greer came to the rescue. He saved you. I think all is well in Mountaineerland.
There you go. Well, man, I thought, you know, for somebody who – had the transfer, had the issue where, you know, had the suspension because of a supplement that he took, that kind of one of those goofy deals where had some stuff in there that got him in trouble. And he said he didn't know about it and ended up kind of leading to his transfer from Florida. And, you know, okay, some people wonder, you know, some little whispers or murmurs you hear, okay, I don't know, how mature is Will Greer? I could not be more impressed, Buck, having visited with him at the Elite 11 and then in the conversation that we just had. He handles himself like that in front of NFL teams, he's going to be just fine.
Yeah, I think he's going to be just fine. I think he's an outstanding young man. I think he has the maturity that you look for. Everything that he talked about to me spoke of, hey, this is the kind of guy that you want to be your franchise quarterback. He's done everything that you would want to see a young man do in terms of college, taking care of business. He's mature, got his family in order. So he's all about ball. Those are the kind of things that I want to hear. If I'm an executive looking for a franchise quarterback, this is someone that is all in. He is going to give you everything that he can to be that franchise quarterback that you want him to be.
All right, let's get a couple quick takeaways from this last weekend of college football, then we'll get out of here. We're always looking towards the NFL draft, and sometimes you monitor some of these young kids as they're going through the process, knowing they're not going to be in this year's draft, but in the future. I got to tell you, man, I've been so impressed with Jake Fromm from Georgia, with Justin Fields breathing down his neck in a big environment there against Florida. Thought he played really, really good football, and he's somebody, to me, when you watch him in the championship game last year against Alabama, the one ingredient every great quarterback has is poise. And I think Jake Fromm absolutely has it.
He does have outstanding poise. His ability to be able to kind of fend off Justin Fields and keep the QB1 position at Georgia, to me, has been remarkable, because we know how good Justin Fields is. We know how good Jake Fromm is. We've seen him play in a championship game. He continues to just kind of go about his business, making plays when plays are there to be made. He's an outstanding young player. I'm excited to continue to watch him grow. But look, this Georgia team needed to get back up. They got a tough matchup coming on this week. They take on Kentucky. Kentucky eked out a win versus Mizzou.
Playing good football.
So now it's a meaningful game this weekend. So we'll see if Jake Fromm can keep it rolling. But the Bulldogs, they're going to be in the mix. We may see them down in Atlanta.
A couple other big results there. Oklahoma State ended up knocking off Texas. We kind of said, look, this is probably a good thing for Texas. The last thing Texas wanted to do, Buck, is squeak in that playoff and lose by 50, which might have happened if they had played Alabama as the 4 seed. So that's okay, Texas. Try and fight your way and get into the Big 12, and maybe you can win that Big 12 championship game. We'll see. But they did not want anything to do with that playoff. That's just my opinion.
No, they didn't want anything to do with it, and I think it's obvious that they're not quite on that level yet.
They're getting there. I like Herman. He's doing a good job. They're getting there.
They're getting there, but they're not quite on that level. And so it was interesting. One team that might get on that level, how about the Washington State Cougars? You said it. You told me that they were going to do it. They're legit in the Pac-12, and they got a big win versus Stanford, 41-38. Their quarterback, man, he just throws it all over the yard. It is unbelievable to watch this guy throw for 438 yards and 3 TDs. I just don't know how Mike Leach does it. I don't know how you can just call pass after pass and not feel guilty when you look at your running back and never give him the ball, but that's what the Cougars do. They are throw, 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 and they've been winning games this year.
Well, there you go. And the whole air raid thing, I'm fascinated to see. We've seen now the air raid obviously be successful at the college level. We're seeing air raid quarterbacks in Mahomes and Baker Mayfield, something Will Greer was talking about. They're having success at the next level. So my question is, who's going to come get one of these guys? What NFL team is going to say, screw it, give me Dana Holgorsen, or even just go for the gusto and go get Mike Leach, and let's bring him up to the NFL, and let's just chuck this thing all over the yard. I'm waiting for it, man. It'd be fun.
It will be fun. Who knows?
We talked about Lincoln Riley, right? Everybody's after Lincoln Riley. Where did Lincoln Riley – where'd he grow up? Where'd he learn the game?
He did learn it. I mean,
Mike Leach and Dana.
Yeah, I mean, they are doing it. They're throwing it out right now. They're the hot – the high thing, everyone wants to be a part of that offense. That offense has so many different iterations. But the one thing that is consistent, if you're a quarterback playing in that system, you put up big numbers, and now you find a way to win games while putting up those numbers.
All right. Well, The NFL trade deadline has not come yet. I do think we are going to see a flurry of activity. I'm anxious to see what that looks like. Something we can talk about on the next podcast.
Oh, who's your top four?
What are you working on, by the way?
Who's your top four? Who's your top four college teams? I think they revealed the top four for the college football playoff.
Oh, yeah, that comes out tonight.
That comes out. Who are your four? I'll tell you my four: Alabama, Clemson. I have Notre Dame, and right now I'm stuck between Michigan and LSU. I'm going to go with Michigan just because I like what Shea Patterson has done of late.
You know what my top four are?
Yeah.
Let's go Alabama.
That's easy.
And then deuces, because the rest of it's irrelevant. They're just smashing whatever they play. That's what they should do for that show. Block off a two-hour show. Here, we're going to reveal the rankings. Here is the college football and brand new, spanking new rankings. Tune in to see what happens. Alabama, number one. Go home. It's over. That's it. That's the end of the college football season. We'll see you next year. That's my top four, buddy.
That's your top four?
Wow. That's it.
Way to get it done. That was easy.
Yeah, that was easy. Oh, Clemson's playing pretty good. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Anything you're working on, Buck, you want to throw out there?
Nah, I'm trying to figure it out. I'm just going to go and I'm going to review the LA Rams Green Bay Packer game and see if the Packers laid out a blueprint that other teams can follow.
Oh, I like that. I like the little research nugget there to throw in the notebook for later on in the week. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Remember, you can download the podcast, subscribe, tell a buddy, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We do appreciate that. And check out the videos, NFL.com/MPSvideo, YouTube.com/NFL. We'll catch you next time on Move the Sticks.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to NFL.com/podcasts.